Grace, greetings, and welcome to the DDP for the 25th of October. I'm your host, Paul White. Today, we enter the 17th verse of our study of 1 Corinthians 11, and this is the beginning of Paul's... It's probably not right to say it's the first time he talks about communion in this book, because it's not. Back in chapter 10, verse 16, he talked about the cup of blessing, which is the communion of the blood of Christ, and the bread which we break is the communion of the body of Christ. And he equates that to how we're all one body. But in the 17th verse of 11, he really starts a deep section on the Lord's Supper, what we refer to, because of his statement of chapter 10, as communion. Now, there's a lot I want to say about this. This is a near and dear to my heart. It's a sacrament of the church that I feel passionately about, and one that I've shared with you over a long period of time, not only the last few weeks, but off and on for years, about my love for this and my appreciation for it and how that has grown over the years. And it's become a daily or almost daily part of my family life, partaking communion. And I've received reports from other people who have implemented that by faith, not some sort of rote repetition, but by faith, and what amazing things are happening in their spirit because of it. So I want to go at this over the next few days from several different angles, and in all honesty, we'll probably spend the next week on this passage and what it means before we get into the essay at the end of the month. Today, I want to look at the greater context of what's happening so that we can understand this Lord's Supper. We refer to it a lot of times as the Lord's Supper. I'm not sure if we refer to it because of the Da Vinci painting of the Lord's Supper or if it was in the common vernacular. I'm sure it was in the common vernacular of his day to call it the Lord's Supper. It's mostly communion or remembering what he did, but it's the Lord's Supper in practice because in their day, within context, they did more with this than we do. Typically, when you and I participate in communion, it's in community, and it is because of the fact that it would take forever to take communion in a large scale, we take it in snippets. We take it with a bite or a drink. We used to have those little cups, and some of you may still use these, those little pre-packaged cups of juice with a little wafer. It would tasted like chalk on the top that you could peel the cellophane back, put the wafer on your tongue. And it was basically just a crumb and a swallow of really bad grape juice of some ilk. And so most of us, that was our communion. That would have been completely foreign within this context. So as well as you can, wipe that out of your head for the next few days, because that is not what Paul was talking about when he talked about taking communion. Now, with that said, as we proceed, I'll tell you why I believe that is acceptable. I think we're interpolating that if we look at communion that way in their day. A couple of points of interest that are necessary contextually. Back in chapter 7, Paul talked about the present distress. Chapter 7, verse 26. I suppose that this is good because of the present distress, that it's good for a man to remain as he is. And I told you that the present distress, or literally the Greek, the present crisis that was going on in Corinth, is a historically documented severe famine in the middle part of the first century in the land of Corinth. And not only is Paul referring to a crisis of food where people are starving, literally beginning to starve, but he's also referring to a crisis spiritually, as in the next two decades, the Roman Empire would experience great upheaval. They would go through a multitude, a handful of emperors inside of an 18-month period, and eventually the temple would fall in Jerusalem as Rome would ransack the temple and Jerusalem itself. So it was the end of an era. So there's a crisis going on. But don't forget that famine, because when Paul starts to talk about the Lord's Supper, the great offense that Paul has is not in the way that they're eating the bread or drinking the cup. It's the fact that they are so divisive at the Lord's Supper because there are wealthy people in the church at Corinth, and there are people extremely poor. There's obviously a difference in ability to purchase food. And when they come together to eat the Lord's Supper, they're eating a full meal. The Jewish tradition of celebrating a meal together was not to eat a bite of bread and a drink of the cup. They ate the full meal together. When God cut covenant with Israel at Sinai and he sat down with Moses and the 70 elders on the top of the mountain, his presence was there, but they ate together. They ate a full meal that initiated covenant. When Abraham hosted the Lord and two angels at his house, he made a full meal because it was a celebration of the fullness of covenant. When Jesus broke bread and shared the cup at the communion with his disciples, they ate a full meal because they were sealing this covenantal relationship over food, fellowshipping together. So the great divisiveness happening in 1 Corinthians 11 is that some people are eating ahead of other people. One person gets to the table hungry, can't bring food with him. The other person gets to the table completely drunk. That's verse 21. And then Paul asks a series of questions that are meant to expose the divisiveness and the foolishness and the blatant sin among how those are partaking communion. I think this is one of the underlying thoughts when Paul talks about there are weak and sick and dying before their time among you. It's not only to be viewed, and we'll get into this as we get to that text, but it's not only to be viewed as people not receiving what could be theirs by covenant, by communion. It's also an indication that the present crisis at Corinth is killing people, and the divisiveness needs to end at the Lord's table. So if they're coming together, they need to come together. And it's not only coming together physically, but it's coming together mentally, and it's coming together spiritually, and it's removing the divisive factions. There's a lot of layers to what Paul gets into. We'll go through these verse by verse beginning tomorrow with verse 17. Now that you have this great context, and we'll bring that back a couple of times as we work our way through this, I hope it will help you to have a revelation of communion, not only in the way they partook of it, but in a way that you can as well. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless.